That's right. Our buddy from the movieguys.net, Mr. Paul Preston, is on the phone, ready to give his reviews of the latest, the greatest films of 2021. Hello, Paul.
Heyo.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, that sounds like Paul.
He's having a foghorn moaning.
Am I the only one who heard at the top of the show you were playing Love in an Elevator, and the first words of the show were Sean saying, "Boy, there's nothing like love in an elevator," and Steve says, "Yeah." Wow. You guys got stories. Do you need a moment alone? Or should we...
Oh, no. If the elevator walls could talk.
Then the show became your weekly sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. So far.
It's a good segue, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man. How you been, brother?
So, perhaps not the, you know, you said something about the greatest movies of 2020. Perhaps not that this week, but movies nonetheless, so that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, I have to say, Paul, before you get going here, just Googled movies, just the word movies.
Okay.
And you have to know which movie came up first.
Explain.
The Jungle Cruise.
Well, there you go. It is. That's the big movie of the weekend. Didn't get a chance to see it because it just opened yesterday, and I'm not going to watch it on Disney Plus. You know, so I'm waiting for the theater, and I couldn't get out last night. So you're getting reviews of stuff that came out last week. But I guess it'll be big. I don't know. It looks like Pirates of the River. It's got like a supernatural element that no one asked for, but well, it looks like they'll have it anyway, you know, instead of just cruising.
I'm just wondering how many references they're going to make to the ride, though.
Well, what I think it is The Rock like leads sort of hack cruises down a river with like animatronics and fake stuff, pretending, you know, making the ride more interesting for tourists than it is. Then, of course, he gets involved in a real thing when Emily Blunt's character comes along and asks him to take her down the river to discover like this magical plant and stuff, and then it gets all weird.
Oh, wow.
I think most reviews are kind of just saying it's what you think you're going to get going in. Uh-huh. And none of us are like expecting Best Picture. So,
got it. Speaking of Disney Plus, before we get in, what is this whole thing about Scarlett Johansson suing Disney?
Go get 'em, girl. Because first of all, you've heard me rant on here about like things like Warner Brothers in 2020 just claiming their whole slate for 2021 is going to multi-platform release on both HBO Max and in theaters.
Right.
And so for the guys like Denis Villeneuve, who directed Dune that's coming out, it's like, wait, what? like they didn't talk to him, they didn't talk to the actors, they didn't apparently look at the contracts, they just made this announcement, and he's like, I made this movie for the theaters, it's a huge sprawling sci-fi epic, you can't watch it on your phone, you know, he's like, what do you so he wrote the letter you know, lambasting Warner Brothers pretty much, and rightfully so. I thought it was a little short-sighted to say the whole year's coming out on TV, you know, and in the theaters.
Right.
And you've been doing the same thing. So, I mean, I don't understand why you delay the release of Black Widow a year and a half, almost, and then still put it in TV. If you're going to put it out on Disney Plus, put it out only on Disney Plus a year ago, everyone will be hungry for it, and they'll all go and watch it. Instead, the split format, you know, put it in theaters and on Disney Plus. And the suit basically says that she was going to make most of her money from theatrical residuals, and it just didn't play in as many screens. It kind of took a dive in week two because people were watching it at home, and so she's like, you owe me money because my contract says one thing and you released the film a different way than my contract said. And Disney of course responded with like, well, we're just saddened by this behavior, you know, but I hope you've got a case, because you know, you got to stick to your guns when you say you're going to do something with a movie. And then, I mean, again, if they were waiting a year and a half for theaters to open up, put it in the theaters.
Right.
And now they're doing the same thing with Jungle Cruise, you know. And it's, you know, dopey, as I've referred to it, I will see that in the theater because it does look like a big summer spectacle, you know. So good or bad, it's probably worth at least giant screen, giant adventure, giant man, you know, Dwayne the Rock Johnson. The small screen can't contain him. Like half his body will be outside of the edges of the frame. So you got to go to the theater.
At least the upper part.
Yeah, but as a theater lover as I am, to go into the out to the movies, you know, I don't want to say I'm a fan of a lawsuit at all, but I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'd be pissed too. Denis Villeneuve was pissed. I'm wondering how more people. But I know there was an article going around about how the Pixar team was like, wait a minute, we didn't make Soul and Luca for Disney Plus, and that's where it got released. Now, granted, there's a pandemic, so what can you do? But again, if they're going to delay the release of these movies, then what are we delaying it for?
Right.
For eventually to get in the theater. And I don't know. Again, seems a little short-sighted, I think.
Seems like there should be some sort of negotiation that they come up with a new contractual agreement about release in different formats so that everybody's money is taken care of one way or the other.
Agreed. You know, like people are crapping on Villanueva from the director of Dune, like, well, that's who signed up for. Nope. He didn't. The game changed, and then you got to work it out as a team, but the studios just make the call, and then it leaves artists out in the lurch. And, you know, I'm always a fan of the artists. Especially when, you know, I'm doing this podcast, The Ford Fiesta, shameless plug. And my buddy Adam and I at the Movie Guys are watching every one of Harrison Ford's movies and then doing an episode on each one in chronological order. So, we're in that era in the 70s now when, like, man, what George Lucas had to do and how he had to argue to make American Graffiti, like, it just, all the stories from the 70s just show what dummies the guys who run the studios were then. I mean, now more money's on the line. These guys are even dumber, it seems. So, you know, like, Coppola just, like, kicking and screaming to get his movies made. And then, you know, he makes a Godfather and then finally gets a little pull to go and help Lucas, you know, by producing American Graffiti. Yeah, it's just like they had to fight and scratch and crawl and scrape, and you know, it's still going on today.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what they're, especially for the actor's point of view, because of how everything is being released and everything. So I don't blame Scarlett for you know, going, hey, you promised me this or whatever, what have you, so I'm going to.
Well, yeah. It's a new situation that came up that's never happened really before. Mm. So there's nothing to cover it under rules or contracts or anything. So, it's just the typical companies are taking advantage of the situation until something's worked out. That's just the way they work.
Even if they had the best intentions, I think the execution was poor. Mm. You know, just like even last year, if it's April, Black Widow's supposed to come out, you're like, let's hold it off for a sec. And, you know, and then it gets to be September, you're like, doesn't look like it's going to happen. Let's put it out in home viewing in December. We restructure the contract, blah, 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 blah. But then they put it off a whole nother year and 3 months or whatever. It's like, if you're waiting that long, again, I'm repeating myself, but if you're waiting that long, give it the theatrical release you originally planned, or, you know, the multi-platform release did not do well for that movie.
Yeah.
Apparently Kevin Feige's bewildered too somewhere, going, hey, caught in the middle, you know, trying to be a good producer for his studio, but like supporting his artist as well. And the whole thing's a mess.
Yeah. Well, speaking of movies, Paul, what is something that we should be go seeing now that movies are opening up?
Well, what should you go and see? Well, actually, is it either the movies I'm reporting on this week?
Yes.
Maybe not. Probably not. You should probably go see No Sudden Move on HBO Max. Here's me railing against the home streaming, but alas, that's where this movie went. A Steven Soderbergh movie that has the usual suspects in it, Benicio del Toro, Don Cheadle, and a whole bunch of people like that. It's a great film. But let me talk about what's in the theaters. It's a mixed bag. It's not great stuff. M. Night Shyamalan has his new film out.
It's called Old.
You've probably seen ads for it. He's basically a genre at this point. You know how to watch an M. Night Shyamalan film, right? It's like you sit there and you keep your eyes on everything. You keep your ears open. And there's going to be some sort of mystery afoot. And it's all going to pay off at the end. Well, in this one, Family heads to a resort that the mother of the family heard about online. The manager of the resort says, hey, you should go to this secluded beach on the other side of the island. And when they get there, turns out something about the beach causes them to age rapidly. Like they're going to live their whole life in one day. Well, I think it was like 7 years every 3 hours, something like that.
Jeez.
So already this cool sci-fi concept is sort of set up. And Steve, you can probably agree with this, right? Really, if you want to be old on the beach, just bring hard candy, the New York Times crossword, wear your house slippers, right?
Yeah.
But
and but something to cover yourself up from the sun.
That's right. It's brutal out there. Bring an Afghan, right?
Yeah.
The movie, rather than have a plot, the movie just kind of, you know, they look for different ways to escape or reverse the process. The film spends its time finding new and interesting ways for the characters to encounter these different obstacles of the concept, you know, like, oh, here they've entered sexual maturity real quick, you know, the young kids, and here, oh, their eyesight's going because they're aging. But yeah, there's no real plot, so you just kind of go from moment to moment, all this stuff. So that piled up and piled up, and I was like, man, this ending better be good, because like, it's just, we're seeing a bunch of stuff and not really. You know, there's some relationship things that play themselves out, you know, with the dichotomies and the different relationships.
And nobody had the bright idea to just leave the beach.
Well, that's the problem. They can't. You know, they try to. They can't do it. There's different things that play out. You know, so can we climb up the cliffs? Can we walk through this tunnel? Can we da-da-da? Everything sort of keeps them from happening. There's an explanation for that. But the point is, the payoff is good. So that's very like that very I needed that at that point.
Okay. So he, Shyamalan basically has kind of like redeemed himself then, I guess, with this movie, because I know there's some other ones that he's done where it's just kind of like I don't know.
Well, he's in an interesting point right now, because he came on the scene with these great, you know, Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and The Village, and we kind of became like this mystery sci-fi type of guy.
Right.
And then they said, oh, we like, you know, like most, again, the studio's making bad decisions and M. Night making bad decisions. Like, we should put him on our big, you know, our big time blockbuster movie. So they stick him in Last Airbender, After Earth, and these are just not his wheelhouse.
Right.
It's not what he's good at. And those movies tanked and they were bad, and you know, he became kind of a joke. And so then he did the right thing in teaming up with Jason Blum. Jason Blum at Blumhouse Productions is one of the best producers out there. The guy gives like directorial free reign, you know, final cut to directors. He gives like, gotta keep the budget low, like 10 million, 15 million, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't really often force release dates, you know. So that led to The Visit and Split, and then eventually Glass as well. And I think those three, that's the redemption for Shyamalan, and show that he's got the goods still, and he can make a good, compelling, interesting, original movie. Now, this is based on a book, so it's not straight out of Shyamalan's brain, but it totally is his type of movie. So, you know, it was a good choice for him to do. But I think it came out from Universal, and there's a bigger budget attached. So it's like, don't go back to the dark side, M. Night. Stay with the small, you know, concept movies you're good at. But there's another thing that he does that is not great, and it's like he has this penchant for high emotion scenes and pulling them off really well. Think of like Toni Collette in The Sixth Sense when her son says that he can see and talk to her mother, and she's all overcome by it. Or think of Mel Gibson in Signs. He's got that last moment with his wife who's pinned against a tree and she's dying, and you see where all that dark shit that Mel has inside him comes out and plays with it real well. That scene is really good. But then he turns around and has trouble, Shyamalan, making scenes like simple transactional scenes, like someone ordering a dinner or something at a restaurant can be like really awkwardly staged or have a bad actor in it or something. And that happens all the time. So they stilted and unrealistic scenes have, you know, are coupled with the stuff that's really more difficult to pull off, but he does pull them off. So it's like, it's an odd mix of success and failure. That's kind of a scar in a lot of his films. So worth seeing. And you know, you could never fault to have an AC this time of year, so go enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually see this one at the drive-in, and it was packed. I was worried for the drive-in. I was like, uh-oh, drive-in's going to be sad that the theaters are back. But, man, every slot was taken up with a car at the Mission Tiki out in Montclair. So
that's cool. That's good. That's good to hear. And the other film?
Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origins. Now, this G.I. Joe Origins movie will be like the X-Men origin films in a lot of ways, but mostly that there will probably just be one of them. Because don't see it like taking off and, you know, changing the world. But you got Snake Eyes, probably the most, you know, mysterious of the G.I. Joe characters from the previous movies. And we go back to find out as a young kid, his dad was killed. So he sits out on this path of revenge and ends up in, like, you know, fighting circles. You know how movies have, like, guys fighting and 100 guys around him here throwing money around. He eventually gets into a Yakuza gang. And he saves a guy who was he's ordered to kill this dude. Instead, he saves him. Turns out the guy's undercover with this Arashikage family, the super rich family, and he gets involved in a whole web of this family versus villains, and they train him, and he becomes the Snake Eyes we know, and with all these skills. And then they learn about Cobra and end up fighting on one of the first adventures.
And does this tie in any other way? So, and I think you just kind of said it, though, with the other G.I. Joe movies that are out, or is it, does it stand on its own almost the way Wolverine did?
Yeah, it stands on its own. If you just kind of know that Cobra is a global terrorist organization, then when they come up, that's not weird.
Okay.
And then, but everything else you can kind of take on its own. It's its own kind of story. They introduce and handle new characters well. I mean, is it over dramatic way too often? Yes. Does it make all the best choices? No. Are the action sequences excellent? Hell yes. They kick. I mean, turns out there's just some pretty enjoyable ninja shit. You know, it's just the other G.I. Joe movies aren't great, so this is the best by just being like full of cool action sequences. You know, and when they bring the supernatural element, it doesn't quite work as much for me, you know, as big time martial arts beat 'em ups.
Right.
But so there's giant snakes and there's a magic stone and all this stuff. And I'm like, eh, you know. But there are some surprises to this plot twist I didn't see coming. The character goes this way and takes a hard right. And you're like, oh, I didn't expect that. And then the movie actually takes a risk taking itself seriously.
Okay.
Probably not, but they pull it off, you know, which is to say it's rarely dumb. If it occasionally fails in execution, that's one thing. But something like Mortal Kombat was just, except for like some of the opening sequences I enjoyed, mostly just dumb.
Right.
This is not. And you got Henry Golding, right, who, if you like, you know, Crazy Rich Asians and.
Which was a great film.
Yeah, and he's great in it. And established himself as like this leading romantic guy. I had no idea he had action in him, but he's viable and he's brings the right amount of I don't know, sort of easy to watch action to it. You know, he doesn't bring any giant anything to the, you know what you're going to get from The Rock, you know what you're going to get from some of these, but he's just kind of regular guy, but then turns out he's got these crazy skills. So
awesome.
Yeah. But, oh, and it's got scenes where like you must survive the three challenges if you are to be a warrior with us. I love movies that do that stuff. Oh, you gotta go fight the three challenges, you know, what are those? And then he's gotta like fight the, go into the woods, if you make it out alive you can become one of us. Like that kind of stuff's just great. Like the old days when they sent Chuck Norris into the octagon or whatever, you know, I love that. That kind of stuff. So you know, basically with the AMC A-list back, if you remember, you got nothing to lose. Go enjoy Snake Eyes.
That we'll definitely then check it out. Absolutely. So, Paul, it's always good to hear your voice, my friend.
Yes, yeah. Movies.
Yes, and what's your next trip that you're going to be taking?
Oh, I'm going up to June Lake, which is a lake that's sort of northeast-ish from Yosemite,
uh-huh.
Which is where I went back in April. So that's the next big, you know, multi-day thing. Going up there to hit an inn by the lake and just turn off for a bit.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, in that case, you enjoy it, my friend. And hopefully we'll then talk to you next month.
All right, guys.
All right, brother.
Thanks, good. Paul.
Take care. Take care, buddy. There you go.